Mini episode 126 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 126 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, and we've got a real treat for you here today, particularly for folks who love talking about TV and entertainment. That is one of our many, many, many passions on this program, and we've done this a couple of times recently, not least of which a look back at the TV upfronts of 2012 with good friends Simon Applebaum and Lloyd Carroll, maybe the preeminent odd couple in media today. It is always entertaining to get them on the show with their interesting and complimentary styles, and it's become a tradition on this show to look at the TV upfronts. That's 3 years in a row now that we've done that with Lloyd and with Simon. And we get to do this again today with another very prominent individual in New York media circles covering the national TV industry and some other aspects of entertainment as well. Now, this gentleman is somebody that we had on to cover, I believe, the 2009 TV upfronts. And so it's been way too long since we've had him on the program, and we're rectifying that today, and I can guarantee you it won't be another 3 years till we have him on the show again. But again, a real pleasure to get him on the program today. He is somebody who built his name in media circles, most recently, the last several years, running the Programming Insider. He was the creator and editor of that for Media Week, and he was the head man of that particular venture at Media Week, and has a long career covering TV and media and speaking engagements around the country, talking about the TV and media industries, and he has expanded his focus in recent years to start talking about the next frontier as well, of course, that being new media, and we'll be talking about that as well, how they participated in the upfronts this year to an absolutely unprecedented extent. I'm speaking, of course, of Mark Berman. He is the editor-in-chief of TV Media Insights. Really looking forward to having this conversation. Mark Berman, editor-in-chief of TV Media Insights. Mark, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. Pleasure to have you on today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to be able to talk to you. Certainly wanted to talk to you a little bit about what went into setting up your own site here. We're definitely going to circle around to that, but let's just start with at a high level some of your thoughts, some of your big takeaways from this season of the upfronts, the rollouts over the last several weeks, culminating with the last week with the networks and everything they've got going on. What are some of the big headlines that came out of that in your mind?
Well, ultimately, what we're going to see in the fall is we're going to have 21 new series, scripted series, no new reality shows in the fall, so that's a good start. We will have 12 new dramas, and we will have 9 new comedies. And what I liked about the schedule overall, because there's a lot about it I didn't like, but what I liked overall was there is an emphasis on comedy, because if you recall, it wasn't that long ago where people were saying the half-hour sitcom was a dying breed. Well, it's not anymore. And the networks are attempting to really push that back in the right direction. So I'm happy about that. There's an emphasis, again, on drama, crime-related. There are many new crime-related dramas. And I think, you know, what I liked about the schedule, again, it's all scripted. All the new product is scripted. So the networks are still in the scripted game. And, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle for a couple of them.
Well, they are indeed staying strongly in that genre. And something that I wanted to ask you about here, because we had just gotten a column to our site from one of our associates, Platinum Smalls at DOU Productions, who looks at the entertainment industry largely from a celebrity star power point of view. And he did his own rankings for the new fall shows this season. The show that clocks in the highest as far as these shows go on overall star power, and none of them rank very highly compared to some of the existing shows. But the one that was the highest on his rankings was Nashville on ABC, this new show about the country music industry. What are your thoughts on that program?
Well, you know what? I liked the clips that I saw. It features Connie Britton. She plays an aging country western singer. I thought that was very unique. It looked unusual, and I liked what I saw. It's airing Wednesday at 10 o'clock. It's facing CSI on CBS and a new drama on NBC called Chicago Fire. So there is an opportunity for it to attract an audience, and if it does succeed, it will succeed because of the female demographic. It's definitely slanted to women 25 to 54. What's a little disconcerting about the show, it's airing out of a new sitcom called The Neighbors, and I'm not necessarily sure what kind of lead-in support it's going to get from The Neighbors. That looked a little bizarre to me. So it definitely has a shot, and I like where ABC scheduled it. I really did.
Well, Wednesday nights have been a big sitcom night, I know, for ABC in recent years here. So, yeah, that is kind of interesting, putting a new one leading into this show. Yeah, you might have thought that if they had any kind of significant hopes for it, maybe it would be something a little more established there.
Well, what ABC did on Wednesday, they have a two-hour comedy block. They're returning the middle, Suburgatory, and Modern Family. So what they wanted to do was they wanted to put something new on the night, because airing out of Modern Family is a very good time period. And, you know, when people tell you that the lead-in doesn't matter, that's not true. That's not true. So if you're airing 9:30 on Wednesday out of Modern Family, you have an opportunity to definitely get sampled. I think The Neighbors, to me, doesn't look like the right show. They could have used that time period better. However, it will get some audience because it's out of Modern Family, and it leads into Nashville. And when you look at Nashville, you know, CSI and Chicago Fire are male-skewing shows. So it's positioned very well. We'll see what happens.
Very interesting. So it doesn't have – Nashville doesn't have an established lead-in, but the lead-in has an established lead-in. So we'll have to see what the carryover effect is for that. And that's what's very interesting about the way that these networks construct their nights and construct their programming blocks. Certainly on the cable side, there were some pretty big headlines also. And again, the summer programming has long since been established. They weren't announcing anything that we didn't already know as far as the summer shows coming along. But one of the big headlines I know for the summer of 2012 has got to be the return of this Next Generation Dallas show on TNT that is also seasoned with a couple of the characters we remember from the old days, J.R., Bobby, and Sue Ellen.
I love it. I love it. I've seen the first five episodes. I am very excited about it. You know, when I first heard they wanted to redo Dallas, my initial reaction was, don't do it. Because my philosophy is, if it worked once, let it be. Don't do it again. Because more often than not, revivals don't succeed. Although Hawaii 5-0 and CBS is doing well. They sent me the first seven episodes. I've seen five. I'm blown away by it. It takes you right back to that era of serialized drama storytelling. And what I really liked about it, was it wasn't that they're using Larry Hagman, Patrick Duffy, and Linda Gray just as window dressing. They really are incorporating them in the storylines, and the new generation of viewings really fits well. It works. It takes you right back to it. It sucks you right back in. I'm very excited about it, and I think it's going to do very well.
Well, there's a real intrigue to it also, Mark, when you're looking at that, thinking back on it with the old days, that we saw John Ross and we saw Christopher as kids, and I think could probably extrapolate at that point in time, John Ross is probably going to grow up kind of screwed up with two parents like that, and thinking that Christopher might be a little bit more stable with his parents. So it's very interesting that back in the day you could watch that show and imagine it, and now you get to see the writers actually play it out on the canvas, and you get to see how they turned out.
It is exactly like you would have expected. John Ross is a mini JR, and Christopher is just like Bobby. And by that, John Ross is very conniving, you know, looking to make deals. And Christopher wants to do the right thing. He's the good guy. John Ross is the villain. They work very well together. They, of course, you know, I don't want to give anything away, obviously, but Christopher has a wife, to me, that's reminiscent of Pam, when Bobby was with Pam way back when. And John Ross is screwing around, and it is really good, and it really works. And I think it's going to do very well for TNT. This show, over the last few months, more than any show that I've ever written about, I've gotten more feedback. People can't wait to see it, and they're not going to be disappointed. My only piece of advice is the pilot, it takes a little bit. It's a little slower. It's the pilot. Give it a shot. Get into the second and third episode, and you're not going to walk away from it. It's good.
You're really making it sound intriguing to me, Mark. I'm definitely going to have to check it out, particularly since, again, yeah, I think it would have been a mistake for them to have thrown any curveballs in terms of the characterizations of how the kids turned out. Just to hear that it's a straightforward kind of a thing, I think, is going to appeal to a lot of people and get to see exactly what that looks like as far as how they turned out. In terms of serialized dramas, let me veer away from the upfronts just for a second here, just in terms of the timeliness to get your thoughts on this. What a lot of people are calling perhaps the most Mad Men of all Mad Men episodes last week here, something that just, I think, was very shocking and really has some connotations for the remainder of the series when you're looking at two of the lead female characters on there. Joan basically hooking to get her 5% of the agency, and Peggy moving on to greener pastures, at least for now. What are your thoughts about how this changes the landscape for the rest of the show, really, not just this season?
I think what they did was very good, because you know what, they're keeping it fresh and they're keeping it alive, and it's not gotten to the point where you're thinking, oh, we've been there, done that. I think it really takes a different twist and a different turn. But the one thing you have to remember about Mad Men, which is what people do not realize about that show, this is not what you would call a mass hit. This is a show that, it critically, it's brilliant, it wins all the awards, it has a huge cult following, but it's not a mass appeal hit like The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead on AMC is a show that really brings in the masses. This show does not, which people don't realize that about Mad Men. But, you know, when anyone doing their top shows in the history of television, Mad Men deserves a place on it. And I think what they've done is they've really taken it and put it into a different direction, and it only goes to show you that they realize you can't rest on your laurels. You have to always think of different twists and different turns, and it's getting people talking like you and I. So I think it was very smart. But again, not a big hit show.
That's all true. And, these are things that we have to bear in mind. And what I thought was most breathtaking about it is that if you trace through the history of the characters, it's all true to where they came from. You think of early seasons, Joan. You think of Peggy in the early seasons and her development and the things that they did last week, while shocking within the context of season 5, didn't come out of nowhere, and you have to applaud them for the continuity, and in some cases, I think, having to reach back for the continuity. On the subject of things that are not mass hits, things that are of a more niche nature, something I wanted to talk to you about, this year being the year where we saw for the first time, and I think we're going to look back on this as a milestone, a lot of these new fronts that were out there with Hulu and Yahoo and YouTube, and not that they haven't rolled out shows before, but the first real sort of coordinated new media attempt to put the shows out there and say, hey, look at what we got. To me, one of the things that really kind of encapsulated the entire nature of this thing, you look at Hulu, which got its start essentially just carrying shows from NBC and Fox and FX and some of these networks that had gone in on building it, and now doing their own programming to the extent to which Seth Meyers, who's been featured on Hulu a lot because of SNL over a period of time, now he's got his own show that's going to be on Hulu. Is that something that really speaks kind of loudly as far as where this new media is going with some of these platforms?
Definitely. Definitely. It's a different world of television. It's a very different world. I mean, we have so many new things coming up. I think the challenge with something like that is, how do you measure that? How do you measure the success or non-success of something airing online? I mean, they don't really know how to do it yet, and it's a whole different world, and there is now a growing original programming online. I mean, it's a different world now, so there is definitely a push in that. Nobody really writes all that much about it. I mean, you know, in my job, what I basically do is, you know, a show airs, and the following morning, I crunch the overnight numbers, talk about what the numbers are going to look like when the Fast Affiliate comes out, Fast Affiliate ratings come out. Then I crunch those numbers to give you an idea. I don't even know how to analyze this. Who even knows how to do it? So it's definitely a different world. There's definitely more original programming coming up online, and it certainly is cutting into the traditional way you watch television. It's very different right now. It's very different. Very different.
It's a situation, Mark, where I know that, you know, these are channels that you're able to get
Now, increasingly via different tablets with interactive TV starting to come into it with Google TV and anything of that nature, you can watch the shows there. But the purpose of these upfronts, of course, in the first place, for those out there that are a little bit less familiar with the animal, it ends up being an attempt to pitch the advertisers and say, hey, here's what we got. Here's why you should come spend your money with us. So what were you hearing at the new fronts as far as convincing the advertisers in terms of the metrics that it's worth spending your money on these programs?
I think the advertisers realize, I mean, you have to realize at this point that when you're planning where to put your dollars in terms of attracting an audience, you want to get your message out there. The message is just not on the traditional networks anymore. It's not just on the broadcast or cable landscape. It is now, you know, growing online. So if I'm an advertiser and I have a product and I want to reach a certain audience, I'm going to allot a certain amount of money to the online arena. I mean, it's, you know, you really have to spread the wealth everywhere. And I think the advertisers realize that. I mean, I couldn't go to an advertiser and say, hey, this is why you should put your dollars on my online program because this is the audience we're reaching. But the one thing that you have to assume is if you're advertising on a Hulu or a YouTube or anything like that, reaching a younger audience, and that's the audience that the advertisers are looking for. They're not interested in the people over 50, and I also happen to think that's a mistake.
Were the new front entities out there, Hulu, YouTube, Yahoo, et cetera, were they beating the drum pretty strongly on tablets and on mobile that in terms of reaching that young audience of which you speak, Mark, that these are the programs that are reaching them most directly in the areas that they're engaging in quite a bit?
Yes, they're definitely, you know, the message they're giving is that, you know, we are a growing segment of the broadcast arena. We attract a young audience. We have the audience that you are looking to reach. But what you have to realize is that no matter how much this grows, it will never be as big as watching a show traditionally on television. You're always going to have a bigger audience. And here's the reason why. I'm going to give you an example right now. I'm going to give you an example. As I'm sitting here doing this show with you, the Friday Fast affiliate numbers came in. Now, this is a Friday in early summer, so the ratings are not all that good. So, for example, if you go to, let's go to ABC. A repeat of Shark Tank last night averaged 4.8 million viewers. Now, traditionally, 4.8 million viewers on a broadcast network is not a great number, but you're never going to get that. You're not going to get that online, at least not now. So, realistically, it's still the best arena to get your message out is still the traditional way by watching television, but you have to realize that there's a growing segment out there and you have to allocate your advertising dollars wisely.
Does it seem like from the chatter that you're hearing from the advertising community that this is a message that really is penetrating? Are budgets starting to get diversified to any serious degree in this, or is it just kind of a slow piecemeal transition to that world?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's not any specific data out there that you can say, well, 20% of the budgets now are allotted to online. There is no figures out there to support that. So I have to go with what I hear and what I think they are doing. And logically, I do think a growing proportion of the ad dollars spent is going outside of the traditional ways that you would normally do this. So, yes, I think it is increasing. And I think what the business needs to do, they need to figure out a way, Nielsen in particular, they need to figure out a way how to measure this, how to tell us that what shows are, you know, what's working and what isn't working the way they do now on broadcast and cable.
Yeah, because the development of those metrics is going to be a very key thing in terms of speeding this transition that we have underway and of making it a little bit more clear where these dollars are going to be most effective. In terms of your perch from covering this industry, Mark, I'd like to talk about that a little bit with you. We talked about it a little bit in the setup here. The development last year of TV Media Insights and of taking your brand specifically that you've built up through your career and just taking it and using it for a new entity like this and something that's really kind of got your stamp on it all the way across this platform here, all the different elements that you've got with the newsletters, the columns, the broadcasts on there, a very interactive forum. I see you interacting with the people on there. So talk a little bit about the philosophy of developing that and how it's come to pass thus far.
Well, I appreciate your asking. It's a very different world from when I started. You know, way back when, I worked in Media Week, and I created the Programming Insider, and that was in 1999. When I created the Programming Insider, there was really only one competitor, and it was that person and myself. And what I started doing was really, I think, pretty groundbreaking because, you know, I was crunching numbers and doing this and doing that. Well, flash to last summer, an opportunity arose where for me to create a new franchise for Cross Media Works. And I went to Cross Media Works, and we launched on September 6th. And what's different now in terms of, you know, what I was normally doing, I have the daily newsletter. Of course, I still have a forum that you mentioned. We have an active Facebook page. I am tweeting like there is no tomorrow. I mean, with the difference now is how the business has changed. Way back when, an item came in, I put it on the newsletter, got it ready for the next morning, and I sent it out. Well, when an item comes in now, I'm tweeting like crazy. I tweet it, I put it on Facebook. You've got to get the message out there. And the difference now from way back when is there are everybody and their brother has a blog about television. So what I try to do is, my mantra is, and I've always tried to do this, when I'm reporting about television, I'm not just reporting the facts. I'm giving an opinion, and I'm putting it into perspective. And I'm taking, you know, my background. I worked in television research for many years, including 5 years at NBC. So I try to put everything into perspective. And, you know, why I think something's going to work, why I think something's not going to work, what to look out for. And we've been doing this now. It's 9 months. It's going very well. We've gotten very good feedback. And but it's really a different world, as is television. In 1999, it was very different. It isn't like it certainly isn't like it is now. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of fun. And I'm now in the process of booking my trip to the summer press tour. So I'll be reporting from Los Angeles for a couple of weeks this summer.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, looking forward to checking that out. And, you know, we've spent a fair amount of time today, Mark, talking about some of the differences over a period of time with new media coming up, with the increasing competition from the cable industry. And you're right that since 1999 and before even, things are much different in the TV world. And yet, you talked about history also. Some of the fundamentals remain, and I see on your site that there seems to be a good reception to some of the different trivia things that you have on there. So it's interesting how you're also leveraging history on there, your knowledge of it, and the things that you've come up with on there to be able to tie these things in to talk about where there is continuity in the business as well as change.
Well, I think another thing that I've always tried to do, my whole life, I was put on this earth for one reason, and that's to watch television. I love television. I watched it in the 60s, in the 70s. I watch it constantly, and I love television. And when I started doing this way back when, I wanted to really write this from the perspective of a person who really enjoys the medium. But there's one point I want to make that I find very interesting, and I think it really tells the tale of what this business is all about. Just the other day, one of my colleagues in the business, Brent Furtick, he's a Canadian writer, emailed me and asked me to comment on a piece he was doing on why the broadcast networks, why the ratings are going down, why are the numbers declining? Is it because of increased online usage? Is it because of increased cable? Is it because of, you know, whatever? There was a lot of different reasons why the numbers are declining, and the real answer is very simple. It's all about the programming. If you put a program on the air that is worth watching, then you'll get the audience to watch it. And case point, Hatfields and McCoys. It just aired 3 nights, 6 hours. It debuted on Memorial Day Monday, a night traditionally where the hut levels are down, and it exploded because it was something worth watching. So it's all about the programming. That's what it's about. All these other things, you know, are part of the equation. But the real thing, it's the programming itself. If the program is not good, the viewer's not going to respond. If the program is good, then there's a good shot that it will work. That's the whole business. That's what this business is all about.
Well, in terms of continuity versus change in the business, to me, the biggest question of all revolves around live programming and what the future of that is, because I just anecdotally, I've got a couple of friends that have become cord cutters, and I think the biggest prerequisite for that is you can't be somebody too hung up on watching your sports, because you still need cable or satellite TV if you're going to do that. But if you're at all sort of passive about that end of it, then you can take in what you want to take in, it seems like, frankly, with one of the boxy boxes or Roku or other things of this nature. We've been in a world the last couple of years with Hulu and some of these other outlets where if you don't catch something live, that's okay. You can catch it a day or so later on TV, or you can catch it on iTunes or someplace else. But do you think, for as far as the eye can see, Mark, that we're still going to have, hey, Thursday night at 9 o'clock, tune in and watch The Office? Or at some point that we can envision in our lifetimes, are we just going to reach a point where a new show gets rolled out and you can download it whenever you want to and there's no mass moment when everybody watches it at the same time?
You know, that's a very good question, and I'm going to answer it from my perspective. I prefer to watch a show when it's on live, when it's actually airing. I prefer to watch it then. Of course I could DVR it. Of course I could watch it online later. Of course, I have all those different options. But to me, as a viewer, I think it's a different experience when you're watching when it's actually on than when you're watching it at a later time. And it's and one thing that I find interesting, for example, on these reality shows, let's talk about Survivor for a second. I'm a big fan of Survivor, so every Wednesday I would watch it. There was a rare occasion where I wasn't home, so I would DVR it and watch it later. To me, it felt different. It just didn't feel the same. It just had a different feel. And then what was unusual about it, the following morning, if I mentioned who was voted off, I would get emails from people angry saying, I didn't watch it yet, you shouldn't talk about it. But to me, experience of watching it when it's actually on is a better one than actually watching it at a later time. And I still think that will always take precedence over DVRing it or watching that show a day or two later. You have the option to do it, but it's different. It has a different feel. It's something different about it. Plus, in the world we live in where there's so much technology and everything's out there, you're going to already find out what happened on the show. You're already going to learn about it. It doesn't feel the same. So I don't think watching it at a later time is going to take precedence over actually watching it when it airs. I think that will still be the key. And I think when you are programming a network, whether you're broadcast, whether you're cable, whether it's online, I think you have to plan it that, you know, you're doing it. This is when the show's on. This is when you want people to watch it. And then, of course, the added bonus is the DVR usage. You know, that's when that brings more viewers in. So I still think watching it when it's actually on is still going to be the key.
Well, that's a fascinating answer, Mark, because it just almost seems to lead to another question in my book, because I have the same perspective as you do growing up in the 80s and back when NBC first launched their powerhouse Thursday night lineup. So I get what you're talking about, but when I'm hearing you talking about it, and I'm hearing what I'm thinking in my head about my preferences for it, I'm just wondering here, in a world where these kids are out there being able to watch shows on their tablets and everything like that, is that something where the world's going to change once folks who don't have the experiences of people like me and you are out there and are predominant, essentially, like when the kids of today or the kids of even a couple of years ago, when they're occupying the dominant positions in our culture, I wonder if at that point in time the attachment to time spots is going to really fade.
Oh, I think, you know, there's a lot of factors in the equation of now how we watch television, and I think I get once a week, I get the DVR usage from the broadcast network. So, for example, a show like Fringe on Fox, that really brings in a very small audience on Friday evenings. I mean, it's barely doing 5 million viewers. The demo rating is barely a 1 among adults 18 to 49, but then suddenly it's bringing in another few million viewers, you know, via the DVR, so you have to factor that in. You have to look at different equations when you're measuring if a show is working or not. It's not that simple anymore. But I still, you know, and then you have to realize that, you know, people like me are getting older, and you have to kind of program to the people that, you know, you have to program to all different types of viewers, all different ages. And it's not just the young people anymore. It's people like me that are kind of like in the middle, that I'm not sitting in a rocking chair watching repeats of Murder, She Wrote. I'm watching all these different shows, and I'm DVRing, and I'm going online, and blah, blah, blah. There's just many different ways to analyze this, and it's become very complicated.
Well, very well said, and it's been really fun exploring this with you here today on the show. Mark Berman from TVMediaInsights.com, it's been a pleasure having you on. Mark, please don't be a stranger on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.